You are listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast, a show for women who are chasing their everyday and epic adventures. This podcast is hosted by Christy Moan and me, Katherine Taylor, and powered by Feisty Media.
Christy, what are you doing?
I am setting out some sweet potatoes for tonight's mechanics camp food.
Yes, so we are live together.
Live.
In real life, in the kitchen, in Patagonia, Arizona.
Yes.
After people have been wrenching all day and then went out riding.
Yeah, they had a great day of wrenching and riding.
They learned all about tires. Everybody had to completely take their tire off, clean out their sealant.
They had to start from scratch.
Yeah. Tape the rim, everything, all the pieces.
Yep.
Casey was freaking amazing.
Amazing.
And you know what else has been freaking amazing?
The food.
Your food. Christy's our chef. Christy and your sister Liz are here.
My sister Liz has been here, like, working her butt off, really helping me, which has been amazing.
So the food is freaking amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
If you're not here in Patagonia, you are missing out.
But you get to join us for our Lifetime Grand Prix preview and not miss out on what our expectations are for this year's event.
Yeah, so this is going to be a short intro because we're literally standing in the kitchen in Patagonia.
Over a stove.
Over a hot stove, getting ready for 12 hungry people to show up.
Yeah.
But we interview Janelle Spilker.
Oh my gosh, this is such a fun one.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say it. You said her name wrong.
No, you did great. You did good.
Yeah, and we talk about what's happening this season with the Lifetime Grand Prix. Who might surprise us and who might we see making some moves? So it's pretty exciting. I think Janelle's got so much great insight.
She's got great insight. And you get to, if you listen all the way through, there's some fun facts about some of the athletes.
Oh, I forgot about those.
Yeah.
Christy's trivia.
My trivia at the end of
it. Yeah, we were going to pull that out for Sea Otter, maybe.
Yeah.
So this is our Sea Otter, our Lifetime Grand Prix season preview, which the Lifetime Grand Prix kicks off at Sea Otter on Friday of the week this comes out. And don't pull the aluminum foil while we're talking.
Sorry, that's so loud.
And we will be at Sea Otter on site. So if you're listening to this the day it comes out, make sure you tune into our stories and all the things. We'll be interviewing athletes. We'll be hanging out at Sea Otter. We'll be getting all the scoop to see how everybody's feeling. So join us for that. And what do we have for dinner, Christy, if they're not here?
Well, tonight is a sweet potato chili bar. So it's kind of a fix it on your own.
It's going to be amazing. It smells so good.
Good.
All right. Well, we're going to get to dinner and we will see y'all soon. If you are looking to buy or sell a bike, I have got a great deal for you. We have partnered with Bycycle, which is spelled B-U-Y-C-Y-C-L-E, and you can find them at bycycle.com. They have over 20,000 pre-owned and refurbished road, gravel, mountain, and triathlon bikes available. It's a global marketplace, so you're going to find bikes from all over the world, from very low-level entry price to very high top-end bikes. And right now, you're going to be able to save $100 on your purchase if you use Girls Gone Gravel at checkout. The other exciting thing is they make it really easy if you're trying to sell a bike. I know that we're all a little sketchy about listing something on Facebook Marketplace, and are we going to meet somebody in a weird parking lot, and are they going to try to scam us? This makes it super easy. You just go on, you create an account. You're going to put the make, model, and year of your bike, and it's going to upload all the information about components, everything on your bike, take a few good pictures, list it, and then when your bike sells, they're going to send a box to your house and arrange for pickup. It's very easy, a great place to find bikes, so head on over to bycycle.com. Use that code GIRLSGONEGRAVEL for $100 off your purchase. Okay, we have a really fun episode today. And Christy looked like she was going to say something to start it.
I am. I'm so, like, this is it. I'm so excited for what we get to do this year with the Lifetime Grand Prix. And obviously, I'm super stoked that we have Janelle Spilker joining us today, coming in to kind of start talking all things Lifetime Grand Prix and what women's cycling is going to look like for 2024. I'm excited.
Yay. It's amazing. It's amazing to be here with you guys. I know that some of the athletes have already been racing, but it yep. kind of feels like the start of the season, right? Where it's the start of the Grand Prix. All those big races that people have been doing, I'm like, man, they really are just getting ready for the Lifetime Grand Prix.
Yeah, they're trying to see where their legs are.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fun, but it has been fun to watch and see what everybody's doing.
Yeah.
Well, as Christy alluded to, so I mentioned this on the intro of the podcast a few weeks ago, but we have an official partnership with the Lifetime Grand Prix this year. We will be at four races covering those races. So the first one is going to be Sea Otter, which we will be at. This will come out on the Tuesday of Sea Otter. So we will be there later this week. So you can be watching the Girls Gone Gravel Instagram account for lots of coverage there. And we wanted to bring Janelle in because Janelle is a commentator for the Lifetime Grand Prix. And we've had her on the podcast before. She's also has a long history in cycling, so she can give us a lot of her insight, both as a commentator and as a professional cyclist retired.
Thanks, Catherine. Thanks, Christy. Just so good to be back with you guys. And I'm stoked that you're going to be at all the races this year and covering the women's side in great detail.
Yes. Okay, let's start with the most important thing first. How did y'all get a helicopter and what's it like being up there?
Oh my goodness. I'm going to have to give full credit to Kimo Seymour, the president of Lifetime Events. He had this idea and was able to make it happen last year for Leadville. They called me, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks before Leadville last year.
That's
I was
generous.
Right? I was in a meeting and I saw the call come up and I thought, Oh, okay. Becca's leaving a voicemail. Okay. I'll listen to that later. And she said, "Hey, Janelle, I have an idea. Give me a call. It involves a helicopter." And I called her back right away. It was thrilling. You know, I had never been in a helicopter before. We're at, you know, it's super high elevation in Leadville and you're flying around, scoping out the course the day before. And then you get to see the whole race unfold. It's really an amazing way to watch the race happen. And then also working with incredible folks in the helicopter and on the ground to try to figure out who you're looking at, because as you could imagine, your hands are somewhat in you're somewhat in the hands of the videographer, right? Who can zoom in and you say, that's Sophia's jersey, or oh my gosh, oh yeah, that's Ruth, oh my gosh, wait, what is the gap? And you're like, you're doing time checks based on, you know, big landmarks and that sort of, anyway, it's thrilling. I love being up there.
So are you watching the video through the, like, do you have a video screen or are you just looking out the side to see what's happening?
We have a video screen right in front of us, and the person operating this massive camera underneath the helicopter is sitting in the front. And so when we see things and we say, oh, zoom in on this rider. Oh, it looks like someone's attacking. They'll try to zoom in and get close so that you can actually call who it is. And then you're also looking out the windows to kind of get a sense of where other people are. And so it's intense work. I mean, after that first Leadville race, the camera operator and the pilot were exhausted from both the physicality of it and how engaged. So it's not a live show. You're not talking the whole time, but you're still on the whole time. It's pretty amazing.
I was so stoked to watch it and, you know, kind of behind the scenes things, because I do get the pleasure of working for Lifetime and Kimo is technically my boss. I thought you both did a fabulous job. And, you know, I told Kimo, I was like, I don't think there's another person that could call events like he can, just from the perspective of what he knows, you know, about the, not just the course and the athletes, everything.
Yes. Yeah. And I've gotten to work with a lot of commentators over the years. I think working with Kimo has been by far my favorite. He's, you know, he knows the sport from all the sides, like you said, Christy. He also is there to have a great conversation. Mm-hmm. And there's no, you know, there's no, can I say, like, there's no ego attached to it. Right. It's like really, it's a really great conversation. And he also sees the vision of Lifetime to be, to bring more people into healthy lifestyles, right? To see the world through these great events. And so that very much factors into how we talk about the race that's unfolding. Even though we're focusing largely on the professional athletes, there's that bigger mission of getting more people to events around the world to live these healthy lifestyles. And so I think that kind of helps enhance the quality of the show.
Well, and even talking with Helena Gilbert Snyder, we had her on a couple weeks ago, and she was talking about the importance of men in the in women's sport and there to support and there to build. And I think that's one of the great things about Kimo Seymour is that he really does understand that and doesn't want to get in the way, but wants to support and like lift women up. And I think you've seen the importance of that from his perspective with making sure that, you know, women like you are elevated and are there announcing and talking and getting to lend your expertise, which is just, it's just cool because it makes it all more of the, if you can see it, you can be it. And that's, it's an incredible space to be able to kind of get to exist in because that's been carved out. So anyway, that wasn't for a raise. That sounded really,
you know, Christy needs a raise. She works really hard.
But it didn't. It's like, it's literally talking about the fact that it does take, it takes that as well. Yeah. So it's,
well, yeah. I think it's important to elevate the men, especially that are doing this work as well, you know, and that, you know, because sometimes big organizations, let's be honest, get a bad rap for being all about the money. But it takes a lot of work and a lot of systematic change to elevate a women's field. When it's traditionally not been something that people have viewed or seen. And money helps that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And exposure is right there behind it.
And also events are businesses. I don't know where we got this idea that this is a total tangent that has nothing to do with the field, but I don't know where people get this idea that events are nonprofits. I mean, some of them probably are because they're not very well run, but they're businesses and businesses exist to make money. Anyway, that's my side note tangent.
Hey, all, it's your editor, Lindsay, here. I want you to get ready to ante up for the Ultimate Gravel Challenge this summer. Join us at the 2024 Trans Rockies Gravel Royale, where adventure awaits in the breathtaking Canadian Rockies. Experience the thrill of a unique 3-day stage race surrounded by stunning scenery on secluded gravel roads in the British Columbia backcountry. With two distance options, the full pint or half pint distances, there's a challenge for every level of rider. And forget about logistics, Trans Rockies has you covered. Fully supported with tents, meals, aid stations, technical support, and even massage services, so all you have to do is focus on the ride. You'll stay at the picturesque Nipica Mountain Resort, nestled in the heart of the Rockies, and celebrate your achievements with daily podium awards, group dinner, and custom design memorabilia. After the ride, you can unwind at Chillville with cold refreshments, music, games, and camaraderie with your fellow riders. Don't miss out on this epic adventure. Register now at transrockiesgravelroyale.com and use the code GGG24GR100 to save $100 off your entry. The link and discount codes will be in the show notes of this episode. Embrace the challenge, conquer the gravel, and create memories that will last a lifetime. So go all in with us for Trans Rockies Gravel Royale this August.
But nonetheless, here we go. We're going into year three of Lifetime Grand Prix. We're going into year three of the equity prize purse and the equity field. You know, I think that that's all exciting. And we have watched this women's field be elevated and like just the talent and the speed that like talk a little bit about that, Janelle, because you've been there from the beginning of all of this.
Yeah, it's incredible. Last year, we talked a lot about the depth of field and the talent and how you have top talent who have come from road, who have come from gravel, who have come from mountain bike. So it's not just that you have some top riders. It's like you've got top talent across the board with different strengths. It's amazing. And then I look at the list this year. So instead of 35 athletes, it's now 30 athletes, which I think has made it even more competitive. And I look at that list and it's by far the most exciting list of women who have been racing the Grand Prix yet, with some new exciting names. And you know, we still have the 7 races in the series, right? And mm-hmm. it's your cumulative score over your best 5 races. You got to start at least 5 to maintain qualification in the Grand Prix. And it goes from, you know, the 100K plus at Sea Otter all the way to Big Sugar. So it's April, mid-April, and all the way until mid-October. So long season, huge range that's demanded of these athletes. Oh man, I'm rambling, but I could just go on and on about how awesome this is going to be.
Yeah, I think as Christy was saying, you know, like the depth of field is so good. And every woman we've talked to that's in the Grand Prix, it's like, why do you want to do this? And they're like, because I want to race the best women, and that's where to do it. But I'm curious of what maybe you've seen in women's racing change with the Grand Prix or over the last few years, because I think it's ever evolving, right? And understanding the tactics and having now women's only starts and a lot of those pieces, we're starting to see where the men have always raced in one way. We're starting to see some of that play out in the women's field. So what are you seeing and what do you think might happen this year in the women's field?
Well, Yeah, great question. I mean, for sure, the separate women's starts at all of the races will be a major factor. I was online this morning looking to see if the race start times were posted for each event, because I think it's also significant. Like, for instance, last year at Crusher and the Tusher, the women and the men had separate starts, but the women started first. And then you have a race like Unbound where the men starts, I think, at like 5:50 and the women start a couple minutes later, 2 minutes later. And so when having the separate start is significant, I also am in favor of the races where the women start second. And I think that team tactics could start. And when I say team tactics, I also mean unofficial team tactics.
Yeah.
But I think that team tactics will start to play in at races like Crusher, like Schwamigan. Sea Otter will be interesting. It's had its separate start for the past few years. And I think that because they hit single track so early, team tactics aren't as important. It's kind of it's like a 4-minute all-out interval to hit that single track. And then it's just a hard mountain bike race. But team tactics, Unbound, Crusher, Schwamigan, those things will come into play for sure.
Yeah, it was interesting because we talked to, Christy got to talk to some of the women that were at the UCI Gravel World Championship. And they had like planned, you know, as Team USA, team tactics. And you could tell that for some of them, this was the first time they'd ever had this conversation and thought about that. Yeah. Of course, it played out a little bit differently on the day just because of what happened. But I do wonder, as more of the women are starting to have those conversations, and it seems like they're forming relationships, like some of the women that have been there the past several years, they know each other's strengths and weaknesses. If we're going to see that more of like, well, I know I can race with this person and we can work together for, you know, if some of that will play out.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it is also still a Grand Prix in which it's individually scored. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I come from a road background where team is everything. And in each individual race, you have a team objective, and it's typically for one rider, especially if you have such a strong rider, right? So, okay, I'm going to bring up one of the new athletes to the Grand Prix just to illustrate this story. Lauren Stevens.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to just put this out there. Lauren is one of my top picks for the Grand Prix this year. Yeah. And it's because she's so flipping strong. She has so much experience. She knows how to race her bike, but she also understands how to use other people to her advantage. And when you race on the road, you get to practice that day in, day out during stage races, during crits, during, you know, so she has this wealth of experience and has the skills and the strength to back it up. So, you know, and she's, it's interesting. I don't know a ton about the team that she's racing for this year, Sonesca, but I am curious to see if occasionally they might throw some riders into the races with her to help her early on. But I don't know. That would be cool to see, but I have no idea if it's going to happen. Do either of you know about their gravel program?
I haven't looked to see if there's any of those other team members yet on the start lines that are registered. And I think you're 100% right. Like Lauren was, I've been a huge fan of Lauren for the longest time. And really, I think the only thing she's going to have working against her is I do think those athletes that have been here, done that, are going to have like the advantage of understanding how the whole season fits together. But I mean, Lauren's going to be, you're right. She has all of this experience that she's got coming from the road background, and she's been in gravel. So she understands, you know, she understands what gravel racing is and what it looks like. And then Matt, her husband, won Unbound back in 2016. He was the overall champion, and she's been the 100-mile champion before. So she's definitely got the legs. And I think she does have the tactics. It'll be interesting to see how it plays into a season like the Grand Prix.
Right.
And she's also trying to go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
For TT this year. So that she actually was on my list to bring up of athletes that are doing interesting things this year.
Right. So I saw that she won two road races already this year in Europe. She won a stage at, Normandy, Tour of Normandy, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then a one-day race in Spain. She won the Rattlesnake Gravel Grind, but Catherine, I'm glad you brought up the Olympics, because the Olympics are the Olympics. And riders, you know, they'll base their whole season around that. And then when you get close to the Olympics, if you're on the team, you're not taking any risks that are unnecessary that could prevent you from being able to. And I'm guessing that she's going to go for a TT spot and a road spot would be my guess. Yeah. Cause
And that would be really close to Crusher. So she probably would not race that, which is probably a good race for her.
Right. Yes. Crusher would be
a great race for her for sure.
But where does really Leadville?
Leadville's in August.
Leadville might actually fall, because Leadville is the weekend of the first day of the women's tour.
And so it's right after the Olympics.
Race, I think, is the weekend before. I can't remember when the TT is.
Okay.
But so, yeah, it's like a very tight if she makes that Olympic team. And you're just another person that is a former Olympian that's on the Lifetime Grand Prix this year is Haley Preen. Do we know if she's trying to make the Olympic team again this year? She was a 21.
Whoa. Olympian. Interesting. So she just did Cape Epic too, right?
Yeah. I believe it's her first year in the Grand Prix, but she won the inaugural mountain bike event for the Little Sugar mountain bike event, Christy. What do they call it?
The Little Sugar.
The mountain bike event that they did in front of Big Sugar.
That's Little Sugar.
Little Sugar. Okay.
Yeah. And she is from Cape Town, South Africa.
Right. Okay. So South African athlete looking at the Olympics. Interesting. I don't know much about Haley, so she'll be a good one to follow. But what about Erin Huck?
She was also on my list because she's one of two moms in the field this year, and she has a younger child, where Emily Newsom's child is, of course, older.
Right.
And she was pretty, like last year at Sea Otter, she had a pretty young, I can't remember how old her baby was, but it was pretty young still. So it'll be exciting to see her.
Yeah. Yeah. And she has that. So talk about talent. You know, I look at athletes like Lauren Stevens, Erin Huck. Those two in particular stand out to me as having this engine. They are specialists, right? Erin Huck being mountain bike specialist, Lauren Stevens being a road specialist. But they've got this, you know, world championship level, Olympic level competition experience that they bring to the Grand Prix, And it'll be interesting to see how Erin does. For instance, you know, starting on Cedar, she could have a great race at Cedar. I know she's gotten some non-traditional training in this winter with some Nordic skiing racing and that sort of thing. But then you get to races like Leadville, and if she's going all in on this stuff, I just see Erin being a major threat overall as well. And it's kind of exciting, right? You know, you watch, okay, I'm gonna do a little bit of a tangent. You watch Sophia, who just raced Cape Epic and got third, right? With another athlete who's in the Grand Prix. And I think about when Sophia goes out of the Grand Prix element and she's like you know, in a bigger pond, it's always interesting to see. And now that bigger pond is coming with even greater force to the Grand Prix. And I love it, right? You can't dismiss the advantage that athletes have who have been to big races like the Olympics and World Championships. Like, there's so much pressure at those races. They're such a big deal. Even to just qualify for them is like insane, insanely hard. And so when I see Erin Huck and Lauren Stevens on the roster of the Grand Prix, I think, oh, these women who have been dominating the Grand Prix so far, this is going to be a fun showdown.
And you know, that's only lighting Sophia's fire.
Right? Yeah. Which is great.
100%.
I'm also really excited to watch Lauren DiCrescenzo race this year. We had a conversation with her. She has changed coaches. She is racing for traumatic brain injury this year, and she's very passionate about it, and she seems very, very happy. And I think Lauren has this mental drive that I don't know if anybody else in the whole series has when she puts it all together. And so I'm really curious to see how that all comes together with her racing this year.
Yeah, right. She just won Mid-South. That's a great race for her. And did it in a big way, you know, doesn't wait around for anybody. And it'll be interesting to see. I think Seattle last year she skipped.
She raced it last year.
She was there. She just was far enough down that's why you thought she skipped.
That's not her race, right? She already.
Yeah, sorry, like, it was her first mountain bike kind of race. Like, it wasn't her first one. She went and did a few smaller ones, but that was what held her back from not doing the very first year of the Grand Prix was the mountain biking. And, you know, she saw steady improvement on the mountain bike through the lifetime Grand Prix season. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, she said when we interviewed her, like, one of her favorite things to do now is to go hop on her mountain bike and ride, which that is not who LDC was, you know, 48
months ago. And I believe her coach is a mountain bike specific coach. Like, he comes from that world as opposed to the road side of things. But it was interesting because she did say, like, that's where she still struggles a little with her traumatic brain injury, this processing.
I couldn't.
Stuff in the mountain bike.
Going through what she went through and to race mountain bikes, I definitely believe that's courageous. It's incredible. I mean, that's amazing. Yeah, she's exciting to watch. And, you know, I think back, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago when she was winning Unbound, and it, like, just again, to speak to the depth of the field, right? Mm-hmm. We look at someone like LDC, and she was untouchable a few years ago, right? And now she's one of, you know, 8 names that we could easily say could take the Grand Prix. It's awesome.
Yeah. Do you all have any information? I noticed we have two folks kind of from down under. So we have Peta Mullins and Samara Shepherd. PETA has a massive following on social media, like 22,000 people. And Samara is a New Zealand mountain bike champion. I don't know if either of you know, they're kind of sneaking in because I don't think any of us really know them very well, but.
Yeah. So PETA, I'm excited to see race. She comes from a road background. And when I was still racing, I think we probably raced each other. Some of the UCI road races. But one of my good friends here in Bend, is a former teammate of her. And so I was asking her, I'm like, okay, come on, real talk. What do you think she's going to do in the Grand Prix? And she's like, watch out. She's a one day specialist, right? Mm-hmm. She won, I think in 2015 or 2016, the Australian Road Race Championships. And if for anyone who knows, that finish is iconic on this grueling hill. They do the circuit, so they have to climb this hill over and over and over again. And so she's one of those one day specialists on the road. She can sprint like crazy, but she has the power for these climbs. So she's also super savvy on the bike, right? She has this sprinter kind of mentality where she knows exactly how much risk she can take and do it in a calculated and safe way for her, but other people might perceive as like, dang, how did she fit into that space? That space, I didn't even see a hole there. Like, she'll find it, right? So I think that's pretty exciting. And then Sam Shepard, I'm excited to see, because she just teamed up and got third at Cape Epic with Sophia. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be great to see her, how that translates to the, you know, solo racing and mountain bike and gravel. But I don't have a ton of experience watching her race.
Well, and PETA was a 12-time Australian champion across three different disciplines. Road, mountain bike, track, and cyclocross. So that just tells you right there. She's
multidisciplinary. Yeah.
Like, what do you want her to race?
Well, and speaking of the international contingent, I'm also excited to see Dani Shrosby come back this year, because I think last year I heard her talk about in an interview how taxing the travel was and coming to figuring out all your arrangements. And I think she's got a really strong engine. We actually are going to interview her at Sea Otter. But I think now that she knows how to handle a season, it's probably going to be a really, really helpful for her.
Yeah, that's exciting. She had a good showing at Mid-South as well, right? There's a whole group sprinting out for, what was it, 4th through 10th or something like that. And so she was right in the mix there, which was exciting to see.
Yeah.
And again, I'm going to give a shout out to Ben Delaney on that one, because he told the men that were around those women, get back and let them sprint for their own finish.
So, yeah, Ben.
Which, you know, yay. Thanks, Ben. That was supporting women's cycling. So,
yeah. Well, I don't think we could count right off any of the top 10 from last year either. Like, Alexis Scarda and Jenna Reinhart are both having a really great start to the season. Jenna still owns that bike shop, you know, works full time, and she seems to be in really great form this year.
Right. Yeah. So,
go ahead. Sorry.
Second at Mid-South. Right. And she's on my list for sure. She's on that kind of like could surprise and be in the top contention for the top three in the Grand Prix. And all that experience that she brings with her from previous seasons. I think that's pretty phenomenal. Christy, what were you going to,
I just was going to holler out, you know, like kind of the dark horses that I've been looking at that, you know, Anna Hicks is one of those for me that, you know, Anna gets what at Big Sugar. She was like third, I think, something mm-hmm. like that, third or fourth at Big Sugar, on a borrowed bike without like her, like everything she was there to do was not on anything she knows. So I'm like, you know, it's just, I love seeing that. I love that from the perspective of, we all get hung up on what's the equipment, what's this, what's that, what's this. And Anna just showed up and was plopped on a bike and crushed it. So, you know, there's kind of something to be said that, you know, you just got to ride your bike, so whatever bike that might be. And, you know, I love that she did so well at Big Sugar and then applied for the Grand Prix. And I think she's obviously super young, but, I'm excited to see what her season looks like. And I think she's, even if this isn't it, I think she's definitely somebody to keep your eye on as she's maturing in this space. So
I would also put Anna Yamauchi in that conversation. We saw her last year. She had a lot of bad mechanical issues, but she earlier this season was diagnosed as celiac, which several people on my team are, and Sarah Gross, who is our CEO. And she won 2 Ironman champions after that diagnosis, because it turned out her body wasn't getting the nutrients she needed to train and race. So I'm curious if that, how long that has been, you know, because celiac can come on. But if she has better mechanical issues, and then she has a new bike sponsor this year, she's an Allied athlete. And then you know, how that nutrition aspect might really benefit her. Cause she's just, I mean, she's one of our favorites to watch just cause she's always so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Fan favorites are always my favorites because they're fan favorites for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of fan favorites, another person I'm really curious about this year, and she's a fan favorite because Christy and I are both also into trail running. Heather Jackson's going to do that double again.
Oh my gosh.
Unbound Western States.
Yeah. Heather's incredible, right? Gosh. What she's able to do, and she's doing, like last year, we're all like, wow, let's see how this works out. And she's doing it again. Right. So to me, that signals that she has found how to balance the endurance trail running with the Grand Prix. She's awesome. I love also how she gives so much to the community through the videos that she puts together, and you really get a sense of, for, you know, what she's doing in preparation, the struggles that she has at races. And yeah, I'm excited that she's a part of the Grand Prix. It would be cool to see her have a big result in one of these races.
And she's never not smiling. She's always smiling.
Yeah. I think she's learned over the years, and I've heard her talk in other interviews, we're also working to get her on the podcast, but just how she had to learn to turn her competitiveness into like having a positive attitude and really thinking of that she gets to do this, you know. So when she has things like, I know she was targeting Unbound last year and lost that, you know, had mechanicals, she's really able to turn that around. It is unfortunate with the Western States timing, because I do think that Crusher would be a great race for her. And I don't, it's like two or three weeks before, and I think the recovery from running 100 miles, she just doesn't try for that race.
Yeah. That climbing, right? It Crusher for me, if we're going to just look at the Grand Prix for a second, Crusher is such an interesting one in the Grand Prix because it is so climby. And it's at altitude. And maybe also because it's in the middle of nowhere, that it sometimes is the race that people forget about. But I think that it is really possible to have a fantastic Unbound and then go to Crusher and race really, really well, even though those two races are quite different. But if you throw a 100-mile trail running race in the mix, it's a whole nother animal. But Crusher, yeah, it's an interesting one. It's almost like it's stuck between the big Unbound and the big Leadville, right? And it doesn't get as much of a spotlight as I would think that it deserves.
Well, you said it's mostly climbing. I'm like, I would argue that there aren't any flats.
That's true.
You're either going up or you're going down.
I mean, you're either going up or you're going down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That the first time I was out there and I was driving to the finish to go up there to check for coverage or something like that. And I thought, this is just ridiculous. This is mean. This is actually mean right here.
You know what, Christy, there is a flat section of that course. It's after you climb back up the Col de Crush. You don't get to descend. You have to just keep pedaling your bike across that like mountain meadow road. Yes, no recovery allowed. Do that for like 5-10 miles and then a tiny downhill before you just climb to the finish.
Yeah. Thanks, Burke.
Well, I love all these stories about these women or just conversations about these women. Is there anybody else that you think we should be keeping an eye on or be thinking about? I would be remiss not to bring up Crystal Anthony. I think she's so steady. Mm-hmm. Every year she's very quietly just shows up in races. She's one of the older athletes in the field, which she's in her 40s, so she's not that old, but I think like there's a lot of years of experience that she has, and she just knows what needs to happen and gets it done.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry, Janelle.
No, go ahead, Christy.
I just was going to say, I would say kind of the same sort of vein about Kristen Legan. Like mm-hmm. she just kind of flies under the radar, but she's consistent. She knows what it takes. She's always hovering in that same spot. And if she puts together one or two great races, she's going to crack that top 10 nut, I think. So.
And she told us she came back because she loves that XL distance, but she came back because she wanted to race this women's field because it's so good.
That's awesome. on my list that we haven't mentioned, Paige Onweller.
Oh.
And I know she's coming back, right? She had surgery over the winter, but dang, she is a fantastic bike rider. She manages all the disciplines. She has the, you know, she's been on the top step, so she has that hunger and she can consistently perform. So it'll be good to see, you know, how she comes back from injury this year. And sometimes athletes who start a little bit slower on this season can, you know, put out their top finishes towards the end of the Grand Prix and can still favor or figure into the top five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. And she did move to Bentonville this past year, which I think is probably good for her to be settled. She was doing the van life cycling thing last year, which was, I think she got to train in a lot of places, but I do think probably having that strong women's community in Bentonville and training on those roads is going to be a benefit for her as she's coming back from this injury.
Agreed.
Well, just specifically on Sea Otter, I know we talked about it as like a hard start. You are redlining out the door, but it's not a super technical course. Do you think, does it favor the mountain bikers or does everybody have a shot at this one? What do you think, Janelle?
I think it favors the mountain bikers. I think it's too, I think it's early in the season. And so people are, and it's the first one in the Grand Prix. So nerves are high. And I think when you're a mountain biker, and even though it's not quote unquote technical, it's actually, it's California, and California is notoriously dry. Mm-hmm. And it's like, loose on hard packed, which makes traction management essential, right? We've seen lots of riders crash there and break things or, you know, have difficulties and it kind of throws them off that first part of the season. But I think because when mountain bikers are used to racing in those types of conditions over and over and over again, it kind of gives them an advantage just given the early season jitters. So there's a lot of single track and it starts early. So I really do still think that mountain bikers have the advantage at Sea Otter.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And, you know, there's also the Sea Otter uniqueness. So it's on Friday this year, but the other demands that are placed on the athletes at Sea Otter, right? All your sponsors are at Sea Otter. So you're going and signing autographs and kissing babies. And so there's that element too. And I think that those athletes who have raced it before, who have been to Sea Otter all, you know, years and years are familiar with that. And, you know, they'll have the opportunity to shine, but it's early. It's so early in the year.
Yeah, it is a lot. There are a lot of media commitments I think they have there as well. They use that kind of getting their headshots and having a big, you know, press conference. And so it you're right. There is a lot of hoopla where I think when they get to Unbound, a lot of times sponsors don't have the same expectations around them because they know they're there to perform, or they like at least have kind of that break where a lot of people will cut it off on Friday and then not take any sponsorship commitments on Friday before the race on Saturday, where here it's like a pretty quick get everything in for Sea Otter.
Yeah.
Well, I also wanted to ask both of you, when we're looking at the larger landscape of women's sports this year, or in the last few years, and there's so much exciting happening, right? Right now, March Madness is going on. The women's tournament has sold more tickets than the men's tournament. We're just seeing the rise and, you know, everything from what's happened with the Tour de France Femmes the last few years to what's happening in women's soccer all across the board. Where do you think that this conversation with this group of athletes plays into it?
That's a big question, Catherine.
I think it fits in right alongside with all of it. Like, I think it's I think, you know, the whole thing of that women's sports, this isn't a moment. This is a movement. This is what it is. Like, I think that it's the timing of it is so good from so many perspectives that there is momentum going into this year's Grand Prix there's momentum around all of it. So it's just elevating everything and people are really getting an opportunity to see
what women athletes are capable of, regardless of the sport that they're performing in. It's my take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think because there's so little women's like racing in the US that we can watch on the cycling side, that the Grand Prix plays such a big role for US fans.
Yeah. The Grand Prix really has started the fact that they show the races, right, with these recaps and the Call of a Lifetime series, we can watch the racing and we can learn the stories of these riders. And so it has, when I look at it, it's the one race series or events that is saying, hey, road cycling, like, hey, pro mountain circuit race, whatever. You guys left this spot available. You weren't taking advantage of the fact that you have these amazing women athletes and you weren't showing the world. So we're going to show the world, right? So, it has very much taken advantage of the fact that women's racing wasn't being shown, and now it is. And I think that's also why we see the top talent flocking to the Grand Prix. And I don't think there's any mistaking the fact that the Grand Prix is incredibly demanding. You know, when I think back to racing full-time on the road and traveling 230 days a year, like being away from home that amount of time, the Grand Prix, that seemed demanding, but the Grand Prix is just as demanding. And it's kind of taken the place that road racing and traditional mountain bike and all these other disciplines, they kind of left it open. So
yeah.
Kudos.
I think it's important to know too, like, so some athletes, like obviously they'll get to stay in sponsor houses but a lot of people, they're figuring out their own travel. They're figuring out their own arrangements, like all the stuff that everybody else has to do. When you're getting to race, they're packing their bikes, you know, and some, granted, if you're at the top level, you probably have a sponsor that's taking care of that. But a lot of these women are like managing all those pieces as well as racing. And sometimes we think, oh, to be a pro, you don't have to do any of that. But in this type of racing, you're doing that as well.
Right. You don't, I mean, most of these women don't have a team where the dedicated mechanic, soigneur, and team director handle all of the logistics and take care of you when you're there. Right. So they are one woman shows, and they have to be the director of their own team and then find and be the athlete. It's a lot. It's going to be really neat to see how the Grand Prix plays into an Olympic year, because the Olympics still matter, right? In terms of the general population, people are exposed to new sports and they find their love of sport by watching the Olympics. And so it'll be interesting to see how they go hand in hand. Even though, you know, we don't have a gravel in the gravel race in the Olympics, does the occurrence of the Olympics this year bring more visibility, more fans? Like, will we see more fans at Big Sugar this year as a result of, and more people tuning into Leadville to see some of the Olympians who had just raced? And maybe they're at Leadville, maybe they're at Big Sugar. Like, it could be pretty remarkable.
I almost think it can go both ways too, right? Now you have an athlete that you've met through the Grand Prix to follow at the Olympics. So, you know, you've gotten exposure in the United States to these athletes because of the Grand Prix. And so now you're interested in cycling at the Olympics. So it all feeds. It's like the rising tide, you know?
Yep.
So it just feeds it. And that's what is the most special thing about all of this right now for me. It's just like, we're literally growing this.
Yeah.
We're watching it happen right in front of our eyes.
And I also think about the listeners of this podcast who are also getting ready to race at Seattle and getting ready to race at Unbound. You know, the logistics to race the 200 distance at Unbound is also something that all of the other women who are lining up for Unbound are thinking about, right? It's really, oh man, Cycling, such a cool sport. We're all in this together.
We are. Really cool. Yeah.
Okay, I think Christy wanted to play a little game with us to see how well we know the athletes to finish this out.
Let me pull some of these fun facts up, and then you guys can try to guess what athlete I'm talking about. Let's start with an easy one. Is a classically trained pianist. Who is that?
Oh, that one's easy.
Newsom.
Yeah. See, I'm letting you warm up. That's an easy one. I'm showing two Tokyo Olympians on the roster.
Two of them. Haley Smith and Haley Preen. Is that right?
Haley Preen, maybe. I don't have that down on my sheet, but I have Sophia. Diafane Gomez was also a Tokyo Olympian in 2020.
Oh, she was not. I was wrong. Haley Preen was not.
Let's try this one. I love this one. I'm trying to find it because I want to word it just right. This athlete, in an effort to raise awareness around the Tour de France for women, rode the entire Tour de France one day ahead of the men in 2012.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I know.
Are you kidding me?
Oh.
It's not Sarah Lange, is it?
Mm-mm.
2012?
I can give you another tip, another hint. Okay. She is the athlete that won the XL in 2023.
Kristen Ligon.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, she did that.
Isn't that amazing?
That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah, was she with that group of women that wrote it?
I don't know. It doesn't give me much more information than that.
Well, guess we'll have to ask.
Okay, I've got my little cheat sheet here. Okay, let's do this one because it's kind of fun. This Lifetime Grand Prix athlete was a former child model.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Okay, can you give us a hint?
A hint?
Okay, I'm gonna just go for a guess.
Okay.
Because she also has a great social presence. Danny Shawsbury.
Not Danny.
Darn it.
I'm gonna go with Anna Yamauchi.
Nope, not Anna. Catherine will get it with this one. She is an engineer at SRAM.
Oh. I'll let Janelle guess.
It's funny. I wonder if we could take a count on how many SRAM employees have become pro athletes. Like, it's kind of saying, okay.
He still works full time though.
And
she was 10th last year in the Grand Prix.
Whoa. Okay, you can just go for it. You can.
It's Deanna.
Deanna Mayles.
I'm looking at her picture. I'm like, she is quite
a child model. What sort of modeling did she do?
That's a great question. You'll have to ask her that when you get to talk to her.
Janelle's like, I'm getting ready for my announcing gig right now.
This one's kind of fun. This
one's from the helicopter.
You guys will get this one fairly easily. Besides the wind, her favorite training partner is Crystal Anthony.
Oh, I'm stumped.
Yeah, hey, me too.
Besides the wind. Oh, wait. Who did we just say just moved to Bentonville?
Mm-hmm.
Paige?
Yeah,
Paige Onweller.
Paige Onweller, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that they were training together. Oh, so cool.
Oh, that's all I got for you.
Oh, I enjoyed that.
Well, maybe we'll have to play that on the Girls Gonna Gravel social media, the Instagram account. We'll maybe play some of those.
I can get you some fun facts. Like, maybe we can have some sort of a prize.
Maybe we could do that at like Sea Otter, Christy. We can go around and ask people, like,
which athlete? And if you did get it, you get a free t-shirt or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool. Follow me for more tips.
Or pictures of our dog.
or pictures of my dog. Yes.
I know. People always ask about my personal social media. I'm like, it's just my dog.
It's just my dog.
You don't want to know what it is. But we do want to know what yours is, Janelle, and how we can keep up with you.
Yes.
Oh, well, you can follow me on socials at Janelle Spilker, JanelSpilker. I will try to post some things. And actually, you know, it's a lot easier to follow me on Strava. I post something to Strava almost every day. And you know, all you have to do there is name your ride and throw up some pictures. And it's just such an easy sharing space. So you can find me on Strava as well. Probably by searching for my name, Janelle Spilker.
Awesome. And is there going to be a helicopter at Sea Otter?
The rumor is there will be a helicopter.
Nice. All right. Well, we will be looking forward to your updates live from the helicopter at Sea Otter. And thank you so much for joining us for this conversation.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's so fun to chat with both of you and looking forward to seeing you the whole season at the Lifetime Grand Prix. Woohoo.
You have been listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast. This podcast is edited and produced by the team at Live Feisty Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating. It really helps other women find the podcast. And be sure to follow us at Girls Gone Gravel on Instagram or Facebook.